الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على خير خلقه سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
الصلاة والسلام على أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين ولعنة الله على أعدائهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم.
صلوات اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
وعما بعد، فقد قال الله سبحانه وتعالى في الكتاب المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله، صدق الله العلي العظيم. صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد.
Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. I guess we should begin this evening's discussion with an apology from me as far as missing last week's program. I had indicated to a brother earlier in the day that I probably wouldn't be able to make it. You know, it's not always that a person feels like advising or reminding or ministering when they themselves might need some reminding or ministering to, or advising. And it's a difficult position to have to get up on the representation of the Minbar of Prophet, and to day after day, or week after week, come up with a coherent message that will be an inspiration to people, and also useful to yourself. So please accept my apology for missing last week's program. Inshallah, we'll try to contain these outbursts on my part. If you send a salawat, we'll continue, inshallah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
As Arba'een is approaching, the time of year is also approaching where we as Shia Muslims begin to now turn the corner. This time of year is the time of year of remembering Imam Hussein's movement, that spiritual revolution led by Imam Hussein and by Ahlul Bayt. And it's during this time of year, from the 1st of Muharram until just after Arba'een, that we as Shias really focus on this movement and put a lot of attention on this epic history and have speakers and speeches and majalis. But then after this period of time, we move on. It's like the news. This is the headline for now. And soon our headline will change. And it's important for us that before we get back into the rest of our year, that we spend a little more time understanding the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, and that we spend a little more time learning about this great historical event that saved Islam and produced inside of Islam a revival movement that continues even to this day. After this period of time, we have the opportunity to take these lessons and to try to put them into action. So inshallah, this evening I wanted to begin speaking to you about the aims and goals and the different aspects of Imam Hussein's movement. And in particular, there are four basic aspects of Imam Hussein's movement. And we want to discern between these four basic aspects, because there's many aspects, a multitude of aspects and different points of view. But we're going to narrow them down for the purposes of our short discussion to four. And over some time we have to discuss this, of course. But these four are basically this. These elements in the movement of Imam Hussein. That first element is the issue of bay'ah, the issue of allegiance that is demanded of Imam Hussein alayhi salam by Yazid ibn Muawiyah lanatullah alayhi. So this is one aspect of Imam Hussein's movement that cannot be overlooked. But at the same time, often when we're asked about Imam Hussein's movement, we give this particular aspect, this particular issue, the issue of bay'ah, a front seat. We give it a place high in the hierarchy of defining aspects of Imam Hussein's movement. And the question is it deserving of such? Another aspect of Imam Hussein's movement is the da'wat of the people of Kufa to him, the invitation of the people of Kufa to Imam Hussein. And again, this is an elemental aspect of Imam Hussein's movement. It shapes the movement in a way that cannot be comprehended easily. Just as one example of the aspect of the invitation of the people of Kufa. The place of Karbala can only be reached by Imam Hussein through means of these invitations. Imam Hussein sets out in the direction of Karbala due to the letters of invitation and ends up in Karbala after he runs into Hur ibn Ziyad and is sidetracked away from Kufa to the land of Karbala. So this issue of da'wah, this issue of the invitation of the people of Kufa to Imam Hussein, this also, it plays a part. It plays a part in and an elemental part, just like Bayah, in the movement of Imam Hussein. But again, when we talk about the movement of Imam Hussein, we may be prone to giving this aspect also more props, more respect, than more a higher position than it's due. Just like with Bayah. So with the Dawat and with the Bayah aspects of Imam Hussein's movement, we often put these near the top of our list of elements in Imam Hussein's movement. When actually, when we look at the historical document, we see that Imam Hussein only mentions these things in passing. These things are only mentioned by Imam Hussein in his passing. And although they play an integral role in the movement of Imam Hussein, they're not quite as important as these other two that we may cover again at some later time, which is Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahy anil Munkar and the issue of Tabligh, the issue of propagation of the message of Imam Hussein. These two elements play a much more important role in the movement of Imam Hussein. And Imam Hussein makes it clear as such that these are the central themes of his movement. That the Bay'ah, while it plays a role, it's not central. And the Dawat, while it plays a role, it's not central. So to begin our discussion very briefly for this evening, let's discuss this issue of Bay'ah. If you send a salawat, we'll begin discussion. The issue of Bay'ah has really been misunderstood. Oftentimes, when we as Shias present this issue in our discussions with other Muslims, or even other Shias, or non-Muslims, we give this issue of Bay'ah as a Imam Hussein Yazid issue. That this is an issue between Imam Hussein saying, merely saying, no, I'm not going to make Bay'ah to this guy, and Yazid saying yes. And so the whole conflict, the way we may portray it sometimes, is that the whole conflict between these two centers on Yazid's demand for Bay'ah and Imam Hussein's refusal. To understand why Imam Hussein refuses to do Bay'ah, and we have to realize that there's a difference here into why Imam Hussein refuses to make that Bay'ah. And to make this issue clear for you, I'll remind you about a little bit of history. You remember during the imamate of Imam Hassan alayhi salatu wasalam. And one thing that should be made clear, in my own studies, I've seen that there is a direct connection between the Sulh of Imam Hassan, the treaty, the peace treaty of Imam Hassan with Muawiyah. There is a direct relationship between this peace treaty and the revolution of Imam Hussein. And you've heard me say it many times before that the Imams, their missions overlap. So that the Imam before and the Imam after, they are in sync with each other. Just as the Imam is in sync with the Imam that will come after him. I'll give you one example. Send a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam, he was at Karbala. He was a young boy, 3-4 years old, but he was at Karbala. And he witnessed these tragic martyrdom of his grandfather and of his other family members. He grows up to become our fifth imam. And he becomes known as what? What's his nickname that we give him? Baqirul Ulum. This Baqirul Ulum, it means something, huh? It means the one who splits open knowledge and makes it accessible to the people. So he's the one who splits open the knowledge and makes it accessible to the people. This splitting open of this knowledge is followed by the work of Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. So Imam Muhammad Baqir comes and splits open that knowledge and makes it accessible to the people. Imam Sadiq comes and takes that knowledge that's been made accessible now and spreads it. So that these Imams, their connection between their work, the work of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, his situation had reached such a stage where he was forced that he had to make a peace treaty with Muawiyah. He had no choice. His own troops were attacking him in his camp. His own troops, when he's ordering them and trying to organize them to go out for battle, they're dragging their feet. He himself has to go ahead of them, make camp. He's at the camp. Set camp in the camp for war, and the troops aren't there yet. So Imam Hassan was in a position where he was forced to make a peace treaty with Muawiyah. And really, the terms and the conditions of this treaty are very interesting, and they themselves are 2-3 speeches worth to understand how it is that Imam Hassan wrote this treaty, how it is that he accepted it, how it is that these things are included in this treaty, because Muawiyah gave him a blank check. Said, look, here's a piece of paper, you write down your conditions for this treaty, and whatever you write, we accept. So Imam Hassan had the opportunity to fully state his case, and he did. And the conditions in this treaty make certain things about his times and what will come later very clear. And it's not the time tonight to really discuss the issue of this treaty. Another night, inshallah. However, the central point of this treaty between Imam Hassan alayhi salam and Muawiyah is that you, Muawiyah, after you die, says Imam Hassan, you don't have the right to select for yourself a successor. The issue of successorship, of khilafat, should be turned over to the Muslims. This is that central demand of Imam Hassan's. That Muawiyah does not designate for himself a successor, but instead leaves it up to the Muslims. Now you've heard me say it before. And you've heard it said before. There's no democracy in Islam. So how is it that Imam Hassan leaves this issue up to the Muslims? Because in this case, the Muslims together, combined all together, can't make as big a mistake as Muawiyah can. Because in this case, as you've heard me mention before, look, whenever you give a Muslim a free chance to choose the form of government that he wants, they will always vote for Islam. You find that all over the world. If they took away all these oppressors that they've placed over the Muslims, the Mahmud Abbases, the King of Jordans, the King of the Sauds, all of these oppressors that they've put over the Muslims, and they took them away, what would the Muslims do the next day? They would establish an Islamic government. According to their understanding, Ahlul Sunnah might do it one way. Ahlul Shia might do it a different way. The Zaydiya in Yemen, they might do it a whole other different way. The Ismailis might do it another way. But if you leave these people alone, they'll always choose an Islamic form of government. And this was the plan of Imam Hassan. But this was his central demand, that Muawiyah should not choose for himself a successor after him. Why should this be the central demand of Imam Hassan? Because Imam Hassan, and in fact Ahlul Bayt, were aware of the fact that Muawiyah and Banu Umayya never intended to let go of rulership, to let go of that power. It was the plan of Banu Umayya to keep, from the time that Uthman sat down on the throne, because it became a throne in his time. From the time he sat down, it was over. Banu Umayya said, this is ours now. Understand that in the time of Uthman, the grazing lands around Medina were reserved for Banu Umayya. The best lands around Medina for grazing horses or camel or what? Banu Umayya. When this man was killed and his house was looted, they took out a pile of gold so high that you could not see a man mounted on a camel on the other side of this mountain of gold. And I mean, a camel isn't like a donkey or a pony that if you get on it, you know, you're low, your profile is low. A camel, it itself is tall, and then you're sitting on the front part of the hump. So if this mountain of gold is so high that you can't see a man on a camel on the other side of it, you know it's a lot of gold. From the time this happened, then Banu Umayya decided they weren't going to give up this power. And this was the plan of Muawiyah also. And he had made this plan to appoint his son Yazid as his successor. And many times in his reign, he had tried to do so, to announce Yazid as his successor. But repeatedly, he saw that this was not practical. You know, in those days, it was just like today. Don't think that you're doing something today, something new. A lot of times we as human beings, especially today, we think we've got something new because we've got technology. So that because we got electricity, our music somehow is different than music before. No, it's not. That the ways in which we entertain ourselves or commit sins, that things have changed some way, somehow. Look, what is today was the same way yesterday. And in those days also, people were very interested in what those who had power or wealth were doing. Today you go in the grocery store and you see People magazine right there on the shelf when you're going out. They put it there to get you. That while you're standing up in line, you look over at the headlines and you get to see what Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are doing. Are they getting divorced? Are they going to stay married? Are they going to adopt another kid from Mali? Who knows? And you can see these headlines there. Everybody's interested to see what these rich and powerful and famous people are doing. In those days also it was like that. This Yazid was known to the masses of the Muslims as a drunkard, as a playboy, as somebody not interested in deen. So when Muawiyah would put forward his name, it was just like today. We've seen the headlines about him. We've heard about him. The gossip, they didn't have tabloids then, but the gossip circuit was full of his stories. Muawiyah saw that this plan was not practical. And for that reason, he kept away from pushing it, you could say. Until one day, a man by the name of Mughira ibn Shu'ba succeeded in convincing Muawiyah that the time is right, the time is now. If you do it now, if you announce Yazid as your successor now, it's good. Send us salawat and we'll tell you the story of this Mughira. It's important to understand how it is that Yazid got to this position, because there's a difference between Yazid and everybody before him. There's a reason why Imam Hussein says no to Yazid, but Imam Hassan says yes to Muawiyah by writing that treaty. By making peace with Muawiyah, Imam Hassan makes peace with Muawiyah. But Imam Hussein is in no way, shape or form ready to make peace with Yazid. What's the difference? There's a big difference. There's a big difference. And the difference is in the personalities of these people. And we'll discuss that in a moment. But first, the story of Mughira ibn Shu'ba. Mughira ibn Shu'ba was at one time the governor of Kufa. Now understand, Kufa is the de facto capital of Iraq at the time. It's a large city, a large and growing population with a direct connection to all of that wealth that's pouring into the Islamic Empire from Persia and from places east, because Kufa is a military camp. It's from there that the soldiers go out for these wars of conquest. So Kufa is a very wealthy place, and anybody that gets to be governor of Kufa, you've made it. You've made it. I mean, you're making money. Because, you know, to get things done, it's not cheap. And Banu Umayyah were known to take these bribes and these type of things and to cut themselves into the business dealings of the city, take control of large swaths of land, businesses, and so on. So it was a big business. And this Mughayr ibn Shu'bah, he had been removed by Muawiyah as governor of Kufa. Muawiyah fired him from the job. And in those days, they didn't have unemployment. You're not going to go and collect a check from unemployment. Maybe they send you to school, retrain you, put you back out in the workforce. No. Mughayra has to think of something to get himself back employed again. He has to come up with some plan. And Mughayra, he's one of those very well-known planners and tricksters in the history of Islam. He comes with a plan. He decides to use Yazid's own arrogance and worldliness in his favor. He sets out for Sham. He leaves Kufa and he goes to Syria. And he requests a meeting with Yazid ibn Muawiyah. When he goes, of course, there's those customary salam alaykum salam, how are you? Long time no see. Sit down, drink some tea, bring some food, blah, blah, blah. And once the story gets going now, the dinner is going, this Mughayr ibn Shu'bah says, what's wrong with your father? Why is he dragging his feet? Yazid says, dragging his feet? Dragging his feet with what? Mughayr says, why is he dragging his feet and being lazy about announcing you as his successor? Yazid says, my father doesn't think that the time is right or that the people will support it. It's not amali. It's not practical. As Mughayr ibn Shu'bah, he says, look, it's practical. Now is the time to do it. And I know just the way to do it. And he pumps up Yazid. Now is your time in life. You're young. You're smart. You can do this. And he pumps up Yazid. And he tells Yazid, look. He tells Yazid, look, here's how we do it. You only have two problems. Medina and Kufa. Sham is under the control of Muawiyah. Whatever Muawiyah says, Sham will do. So you don't have to worry about Sham. Your problem is Medina and Kufa. Send so-and-so to go and handle Medina. The hardest job is Kufa. And you know what? Because I'm such a nice guy. Because all I really want to do is help you. You give me the job of Kufa. I'll take care of the hard stuff. Kufa is the most difficult. It was the capital of Imam Ali. The Shias are settled there. It's a military town. Leave Kufa in my responsibility. I'll hook you up. Give me back Kufa. So Yazid now goes to Muawiyah. The plan seems good, and he mentions it to Muawiyah. And Muawiyah says, it's a good plan. Call this Mughayr ibn Shu'bah. They call Mughayr ibn Shu'bah. They meet, they talk, they eat, boom, boom. Mughayr is appointed as governor of Kufa. The person who he advises to be made governor of Medina is appointed. And when these people assume their appointments, the masses of the Muslims in these cities revolt. Letters of complaint that they won't accept it. This man has been removed from office before. How can you put him back? And it creates such a problem for Muawiyah that he himself decides to go to Medina. I mean, realize what a big problem this is. That there's a problem in Medina so big that Muawiyah has to leave Syria and go to Medina to calm everything down. This is the reaction in Medina to the appointment of this governor. And the same is true in Kufa. The people of Kufa aren't taking it very lightly. Muawiyah arrives in Medina and he immediately calls for those notable people of Medina to be gathered before him. Abdul ibn Zubayr, Abdul ibn Umar, and Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. Realize this is after the shahadat of Imam Hassan and in the last few years of Muawiyah's life. They're gathered together and Muawiyah explains to them thus. He says, look, I'm getting old. My time is drawing near. And I have to think about the future of Islam now. What's going to happen to this deen after me? And in considering these things, I've seen that it's in the interest of Islam. It's in the interest of Islam that we appoint Yazid as my successor. Maslahat, expediency demands this right now. That Yazid be my successor. But he'll only be the outward leader. Behind the scenes, push the parde, you guys will run things. Muawiyah is saying, look, he'll only be the front man. Yazid will only be the front man. We're going to set it up so that he's the face of the government. But behind the scenes, you, Abdul ibn Zubayr, Abdul ibn Umar, and Imam Hussein, you'll be in charge. Day-to-day governorship will be given to you. So what you do, you come and you make bayah now, so that you can get this power later. You guys used to watch the Popeye cartoon?
Oh yeah.
Hmm? You remember Wimpy? Wimpy used to say, give me a hamburger today, and I will pay for it Tuesday.
Yes.
Huh? And often it was the second Tuesday of the next week. So when the second Tuesday of next week comes, I'll pay you. But there's only one Tuesday in the week. So Muawiyah comes and says, look, you make your bayah now with Yazid so that later on we can do this plan. Unanimously, everybody rejects it. Muawiyah again tries another plan by mounting the minbar in Masjid of Medina and trying to convince the people that these three notables have accepted that. Publicly, these people say, no, we have nothing to do with that. And again, Muawiyah's plan is routed. He returns to Syria thinking to himself, I should have never gone ahead with this idea to try to put my plan in action. I knew that it couldn't be done right now. I knew that the grounds weren't ready for this move. Towards the end of his life, Muawiyah was very worried about his son's condition. Understand, Muawiyah was a consummate politician. I mean, really, as far as brains, even if they're used for evil, as far as brains and planning and strategy, he outshined any of those before him, whether it's the first, the second, or the third. Huh? He outshined all of them as far as strategy, as far as brains, as far as skill in bringing his evil plans to fruition. And his plan had always been to hold on to this power for Banu Umayyah. So in his advice to his son towards the end of his life, he was telling him, how do you deal with this situation? When you're confronted with this situation, how do you react to it? When you deal with Abdul ibn Zubayr, you deal with him this way. When you deal with Abdul ibn Umar, you deal with him this way. When you deal with Imam Hussein, you deal with him with kindness, he says. You deal with him with respect. Why does Muawiyah give this advice in respect to Imam Hussein? Whereas with other people, Muawiyah just says, look, pay them off. This person, he likes money, so you give him money. This person, he likes women, so you give him women. This person, he likes this, so you give him that. And in this way, Muawiyah was training Yazid. But with Imam Hussein, he says, look, with Imam Hussein, you only deal with him with the utmost kindness and respect. Don't be short with him. And don't try to force him. This is the advice of Muawiyah, because Muawiyah realized that, look, this son of mine, he's arrogant. He's ignorant, he's young, he's inexperienced. And if he deals with Hussein in this way, we'll lose everything. all the plans that Uthman has worked on, that Marwan Hakam has worked on, that that Banu Umayyah in general have worked on, will be lost. Will be lost if Yazid should deal with Hussein in a way that is disrespectful. So Yazid passes away. Muawiyah passes away. And Yazid, step by step, does the exact opposite of what his father advised him. You know, if he had listened to his father, Banu Umayyah may have held on to their power longer than they did. How did Banu Abbas overthrow Banu Umayyah? By using the killing of Hussein and the oppression of Banu Hashim as a propaganda tool. So, if Yazid had just listened to Muawiyah, Banu Umayyah would have been in a better condition. But as is often the case, Allah uses the enemies to destroy themselves. Allah always, that's His pattern. He'll make Fir'aun raise Musa. This is the way that Allah does it. He'll have Fir'aun find Musa in the basket, bring him in the house, feed him the best food, give him the best medical attention of the time, the best education of the time, the best experience in leadership, in everything of the time, and prepare the weapon that Allah will use against him. This has always been Allah's method. I mean, look at Saddam and USA. USA used to give him chemical weapons and bombs and advice and everything. And Imam Khomeini used to tell them, be careful. You are playing with fire. This fire will grow and burn you too. He said, ah. I said, ah. Until he started firing those same Scud missiles that they gave him at Israel. Realize he wasn't removed because he was a dictator. He was removed because he was a bad servant. He stopped doing the work that he was hired to do. So you can't not do the work that you're hired to do and keep your job. But this is always the case, that Allah will use the enemy to fight the enemy. And in this same way, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala set up a series of events that would lead to the utter destruction of Banu Umayyah's plans for power. And realize, Yazid and Muawiyah, they fail in their plans, even though they are successful in getting Yazid on the throne. They failed. Whereas Imam Hussein, he was successful in his plans and with his aims and with his goal, even though he was martyred. The plans of Banu Umayyah are destroyed by Banu Umayyah. They themselves wreck their own self. This is the way, this has always been the plan of Allah, and always been the pattern of behavior that we see amongst the people. One thing we should realize with this whole issue of bay'ah is that how it came to be that Imam Hussein refused the bay'ah. What were the circumstances surrounding this refusal of Imam Hussein? Because now you get to see what role this refusal of bay'ah plays in his movement. One night, around the middle of Rajab, if I remember correctly, Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Abdullah ibn Zubayr are in Masjid al-Madinah. And in through the door comes running a messenger from the governor of Medina. He comes in and he says, the governor has requested to see both of you. So both of them reply, you return to your master and we'll come in a little while. They go back. Abdullah ibn Zubayr immediately asks Imam Hussein, why do you think we're being called? Why do you think we're being summoned there? Imam Hussein says, no doubt the Fir'aun of these people has died. And we're being called so that we can make bayah with Yazid. Abdullah ibn Zubayr says, yeah, I thought so too. Then Abdullah ibn Zubayr says, what are you going to do? Imam Hussein says, I'm going to go see what they have to say. They separate. Look at the difference in character. That night, Abdullah ibn Zubayr sneaks out of town under the cover of darkness, and he doesn't use the highway. It's nighttime. But he doesn't use the highway. He uses the back roads to get out of Medina and flees to Mecca. That night. I mean, it's like, look, Imam Hussein and Ibn Zubayr split up at the masjid. Imam Hussein goes back to the quarter of Bani Hashim. Abdullah ibn Zubayr hits the road.
Ain't coming back.
Imam Hussein goes back to Bani Hashim and he grabs a couple young guys with him. Whenever Muslims should know this, whenever you're going to face a situation where it's undetermined what might happen, you never go alone. Mm-hmm. Take a brother with you. This was always what we were taught when we were younger brothers. You're going out somewhere, grab 2-3 brothers with you, go. Imam Hussein grabs a couple of Bani Hashim youngsters, young men, strong men, and he says, come with me to the palace of the governor. I want you to wait outside for me. And if you hear me raise my voice, then you come charging in. But if you don't hear from me, then stay outside. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he goes in. Now understand something, the governor of Medina, even though he was a member of Banu Umayyah, he was somewhat different than the rest of them. There was some God-fearingness in him. And he treated Imam Hussein with the utmost respect. When Imam Hussein entered, he stands up. He welcomes him, gives him the seat of honor. They sit down together and they don't begin speaking business right away. The governor, how is your family? How is your health? How are things with you? Do you need anything? He commands, bring something for him. Showing Imam Hussein the utmost respect. And then, you know, he continues, being very respectful with your permission. Messages come from Syria that Muawiyah has died and the people have made bayah with Yazid. So, if you don't mind, if you could make bayah, we would appreciate it. Showing that respect and that deference to Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein asks them, why do you need my bayah? What good is my bayah to you? Yani, what Imam Hussein is saying, look, if Yazid's reign or power is not supported by the Sharia, and you need me to legitimize it? Or is it that you want the other people to make bayah, and you need me to make the bayah so that you can say, look, Hussein did it? So the governor replies, yes, that's really what we need. We need you to. We need you to make bayah so that we can say, you know, Imam Hussein did it, you guys do it too. So Imam Hussein says, well, look, my bayah here in this room where there's just the three of us, because it was Imam Hussein, the governor of Medina, and Marwan Hakam, a very dirty member of Banu Umayyah, very infamous, known in history as a liar and a thief and one of the lowest types. And anyway, he was there also. Imam Hussein says, look, the three of us, it doesn't do any good that I make bayah here. The type of bayah you need from me is one that should be said in public. So, as we said, the governor was very respectful of Imam Hussein. He said, you know, you're right. Imam Hussein says, I'm leaving now. And the governor says, please, you know, you're our guest, you're welcome to stay. Imam Hussein says, no, I have to go. And the governor gives him permission to leave. Marwan Hakam stands up and says, what? You're letting him leave? If he leaves now, he'll never give the bayah until there is flashing of swords between them. Seize him. Carry out the orders of your Amir. Carry them out now. And your orders are that if Hussein doesn't give the bayah, then send me his head. This is your Hussein, huh? Don't think of your Hussein as somebody meek, mild, weak. They say Imam Hussein approached Marwan Hakam and put his hand between his legs and picked him up above his head. And then body slammed him on the ground. And then Imam Hussein says that you're smaller than these words that you're saying. These words that you're saying, they're too big for you. These words are too big for you. Imam Hussein doesn't even need to raise his voice so those three guys outside need to run in. He does it quiet and leaves. This is your Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein alayhi salam spends the next three nights in Medina. He's not like Abdullah ibn Zubayr. He's not running. He's not hiding. He doesn't have to avoid you. He stays the next 3 days in Medina. Most of that time at the grave of his grandfather. And on the third day, in broad daylight, he packs his caravan and leaves Medina on the main road. There's a difference here between him and the character of Abdullah ibn Suhail, or anybody else. His own companions told him, why are you taking the main road?
One is mine and one is boy.
Why are you taking the main road? You should go by the back roads. Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, he says, look, I don't want to leave this place running away like a slave. I want to leave this place with some honor, with some dignity. Not that I'm hiding. Imam Hussein leaves on the main road. Imam Hussein is sending this message for the rest of the generations to understand. That look here, the issue is bay'ah. But the issue is bigger than this. The issue is that if I give bay'ah to him, I legitimize him. And not only legitimize him, but legitimize his behavior, and legitimize his politics, and legitimize kingship for Islam. So it's not about the personality of Yazid so much so as it's about the precedent that would be set for the Muslims if Yazid is allowed to take power. So Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam refuses to make that bay'ah and leaves Medina on the main road. Not hiding, not running, not fearing, showing directly what his position is. This attitude of Imam Hussein, of having the utmost honor in his own dealings, in his own positions and policies and actions, is infused in the movement of Imam Hussein. It is a very honorable and dignified movement. You look on the day of Karbala, these people are surrounded, that perhaps if they attack first, it may give them some advantage. Imam Hussein says, no, we will not start this battle. We will not start this fight. This spirit of honor and dignity and upholding the honor and the dignity of Khilafat, of Islam, of leadership, of wilayat, of the Islamic society is really at the core of Imam Hussein's movement. Imam Hussein refuses to make bay'ah because of this sense of honor and dignity, not just for himself, but for the Muslims, that we are too great a people to have a Yazid over us. That this civilization is too great a civilization to be having a Yazid over it. That this message is too dear and too divine to have a Yazid to represent it. We see that Imam Hussein's message fills us with that same type of dignity and honor. On the day of Ashura, Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, after he had been filled with arrows, pelted with rocks, injured repeatedly, when he falls from his horse, he falls into a little gudal, a little depression in the earth. And in that little depression is where the enemies surround him. All of them know that the reward for Hussein's head will be the greatest reward. People are being paid for heads. And whoever should cut the head of Hussein will be that person that will get that reward. So as they surround Imam Hussein, they want to go in and to slaughter him, but they're afraid. They've seen this lion in battle. They're thinking to themselves, maybe this is a trick that Hussein is playing on us. That he's only playing possum, as we say. He's playing dead. That when we draw close, he'll lash out and attack us, and we won't be able to overcome him. So even though they outnumber Hussein, and Imam Hussein is too weak to stand up on his own feet, too weak to even raise his body up, too weak to fight anymore, too weak to resist anymore, still they're afraid of Hussein. So they come upon a plan. And they devise a plan to find out, is Hussein dead? Is Hussein playing dead? Is Hussein playing injured? Or will Hussein attack us? How do you find out if Hussein can get on his feet? How do you find out if Hussein can overcome this weakness and these wounds? They decide, they say, Hussein, we're going to attack your tents. We're going to loot the tents of your family members, Hussein. They leave the body of Hussein and they begin to go towards the tents to attack the tents. Imam Hussein is tired. He's thirsty. He's bleeding. He's wounded. He's been filled with arrows. And he hears a voice, and this voice says to him, Hussein, they're attacking your camp. Hussein, where are you now? Are you dead, Hussein? They're setting fire to your tents. Hussein then, with one of these spears that he's been stabbed with, he props himself up and forces himself to his knees. And he cries out, if you have no deed, if you have no fear of the afterlife, then where is your honor as free men? Where is your dignity as Arabs that you should attack women? What does Hussein say to them? Hussein says to them, this killing is between me and you. The ladies have nothing to do with it. Come back to me now. Come back. I'm the one you want. It's my head that you want, not them. You leave them alone and you come back to them. To me. And in this way, Imam Hussein was able to draw some of them. That even in these last moments, Imam Hussein would not, his honor, his dignity would not allow him to let anyone attack those tents of his family members. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to continue to teach us through the message of Karbala. To make us supreme and perfect followers of Imam Hussein. To guide us to a straight path and to forgive us of our sins. Wa la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah illa billah.
Yo sing,
Holy Khatun.